Welcome to the April 11th Finance and Governance Committee. Joined by fellow council members, Kate Kroller and Cynthia Delastranis Johnson. We have agenda items A, B, and C, and we have a miscellaneous from our budget director. So let's go ahead and get started on item A.
Thank you. This is Laurel Humphrey, legislative analyst. I wanted to include this agenda item as a real brief conversation about engross substitute House Bill 1329, which amended the Open Public Meetings Act. I suspected that as council members with varying professional associations, you may be hearing that things have changed. And so I wanted the opportunity to just check in with you about this to let you know that it's got minimal impact because you're already doing most of the things it requires, which is great news. So things like posting regular meeting agendas, requiring public comment at meetings where you take final action, allowing the public to attend remotely, physical meeting locations, and we have several meetings for the past couple of months under our belt with hybrid technology here in committees and in council meetings, and from my perspective, those are working well. I'm hearing good feedback from residents, and I haven't heard any complaints from council members, so we're on a good path there. And then the second page, I mentioned just briefly that one of the new requirements is mentioning the purpose of executive sessions in the meeting minutes. So again, we've already been doing that. The one question I have for you is that now state law will allow city council members to participate in meetings remotely, even in times of non-emergency, only if your rules of procedure specify that you can do that. The rules of procedure that you have in place say only in an emergency. And so if you want me to, I can bring forward that amendment as soon as you'd like, just to clarify that you could attend remotely using our current technology, and it doesn't have to be an emergency. So that's a policy question I have for you. And with that, I will turn it over to the chair to facilitate that question.
Sure. First, let's see if there are any questions on what you presented thus far. We'll take the last item. So let me know if we have any questions, clarifications. The memo is pretty well written.
I had a question on just the fiscal impact of continuing our meetings the way they are, hybrid. I know that we use some of our ARPA funds to outfit, you know, the rooms and the council chambers. Is there going to be ongoing fiscal impact? Like, does TIS need an additional person? Like, how is this hybrid like situation going for our staff? Is there something we need to consider for the budget? But I personally like what's happening. It seems like everything works fairly well with this hybrid environment.
So that specific question, I wonder if Ms. Bianchi, who's on the meeting, could speak to. And if she doesn't have the answer, we can check with Mr. Bush and get an answer for you.
Sure. Good evening. For the record, Rachel Bianchi, Deputy City Administrator. You know, the staff time that we use in order to facilitate the hybrid meetings is the same staff time that we would use to facilitate an in-person meeting. So I really don't see a significant different impact than you would have just being in person.
Okay.
And I think the question, slight adjustment is, if there's going to be tracking that continues, so we always know what the fiscal impact is of maintaining both. So that's, I know the answer you gave was just fine, but I think that is also one way to think about this work. All right.
Are we still broadcasting on 21 as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Council meetings themselves, but not committee meetings. Just for council. Correct.
Okay. I just wondered because Joe has been showing up more often than not, so I thought maybe there was something wrong with the broadcast somehow.
No.
Okay.
I know for a fact.
Okay.
So this latter question about emergencies, maybe we can start with you, Kate, and then go customer data experience. I have some ideas, but your thoughts on kind of the last item.
I'm going to pass what others talk and then I'll comment.
I think that it should be allowed, even when it's a non-emergency. I'm just thinking of times if somebody's just not feeling well. That doesn't seem like it's an emergency, but out of the abundance of caution, I like the fact that people can stay home if they're sick, because I'd rather they do that instead of come in and get other people sick. Or let's say someone's running late at work, they can't make it here on time, and they just want to tune in there. I think that we should allow it. That's my thought.
So let's think about, like, Laurel, just like some language options, because I think that would be helpful too. Let's just be step by step. So on that, I don't disagree with that at all, but I also think we should just have some wording in there. I think emergency should be in there. But I also think there should be a process piece where maybe we can notify Laurel that we're going to be virtual beforehand, just in case there is technical issues that need to be maintained. But write it in a way of, you know, council may, you know, something like that. And then, reaching out to the legislative analysts so that they're aware that that's what's going to happen. Because sometimes we'll wait thinking somebody's going to come through the door.
Sure.
And that may not happen. All right.
My take on it is I don't think it should be a routine deal. And I don't think it should be I'm home with a cold. I think it ought to be I'm home with something that's going to take me for several days to get over it. Because COVID's still here. And if somebody's got a constraint where they need to be isolating, I want them to isolate.
Mm.
On the other hand, when I was at NLC, a lot of people were doing hybrid meetings, and a lot of people were joining their meetings when I was not, because we didn't have a setup for that, and I frankly was exhausted. I was just fine focusing on NLC. But there might be a critical vote or an issue coming up where, if possible, we want all seven if somebody's away and can step in. So more of them doing a favor to the council than us doing a favor to the council member. Does that make sense?
Trying to follow.
More of it's a major contribution because there's a heavy vote on the budget, or, you know, something we don't want to have a tie situation come up. If they can make it and help break the vote, if it's going to go down the middle, then rather than waiting a whole meeting, they're actually doing a service to the council by coming in live. But, you know, I have phoned into these meetings,
mm-hmm.
coming from work or at still stuck at work, and I understand that. But when it comes to the main meeting, I think the point is we're supposed to be at the meeting. And I'm a little less loose with, why don't y'all stay home and beam in? But the exception would be is if, again, if I got just sniffles, better beat it in here. But, you know, if I think I tested for COVID or I'm down with something bad or, you know, then I don't know how you call ahead for those situations. I don't know how you know. But if you're on your second day or coming out of the weekend and you're still just down for the count, then I guess you call and say, but then I wonder, are you really doing yourself a service rather than just like tuning out and recovering, which is what people are supposed to do.
Yep. We got diversity of expression. I wonder maybe if there's a way that this can be worded in a way to kind of capture that with the intent that people should be here. I mean, I agree with that. I just maybe wouldn't frame it that way. And then there's other situations where you may not actually be in town, but you don't want everybody to know that you're not in town, but you want to be present. I'm not saying you. I'm saying
personally, I, as a policy, don't talk about my leaving.
Yeah.
That's why I don't join the meetings, because I don't want to announce that no one's at my house.
Yeah, but you don't have to necessarily announce that. You can be virtual in a situation where it's an emergency, you're sick, you can't be here, but the common practice is that you actually come. I mean, that is the rule. But if there's a mitigating circumstance where you can't, I mean, we can frame it in a way where that's clear that the intent is that you be here.
Yeah.
I mean, we all signed up for a job, which is it is our job. Now, for example, there are sometimes work requires a certain thing where in the past it is not there.
Yeah.
But if you have you feel this obligation, and even if it's a hardship, you might be a 3-hour difference, but you're wanting to make yourself available because that's the responsibility. But I think you can just, I think there's a way that we can come up with wording to say, you know, the expectations are here, and in the end, we all got to vote on this. So let's figure out some language that we're all comfortable with and some options to consider.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that would be good. But I mean, I agree with you. Like, we should be here, and there's so many benefits of being present and having creating access to the public too, to us as well. So
now we have a massive earthquake. And we're talking emergencies. I'm going to go to the extreme where we actually have the ability to get power and meet for emergency decisions to help the mayor. Then I totally agree with that. I'm concerned about turning into
a
habit.
Yeah, and I wonder if we could speak to that, right?
Sure.
And
I agree. I don't think it should be a preference. Like, let's just say someone's like, well, I would prefer to take the meeting at home. I don't think that that should be the case. I think it should be you're here in council chambers, but there are exceptions. And I, you know, for somebody who is away on vacation and they want to come virtually because maybe, like Kate said, there's an important decision they don't want to miss out. And I wouldn't want that person to miss out because there's, you know, I think everybody's vote and voice is very important. I hope that this could cover their ability to come, but you know, like Kate said,
right.
Maybe if you're on vacation, maybe you shouldn't.
Just
leave. But yeah, I think there should be exceptions, and maybe it could be presented as here are some of the exceptions.
I'd also like to know, we can't be the only council either considering this or haven't made a decision. This paperwork just came out, right?
Yes, and I've already seen examples of other city councils' rules being shared around, and so I'm hearing the comments. Thank you very much, and I can return with some proposed language.
Okay. What are other councils doing, though? I'm just saying.
I haven't read yet.
I've heard
some people just have stuck with virtual. There's even some that have stuck with virtual that now is in the middle of changing it to being present. Like, literally scattershot. Well, no, they're like in the experience just like us,
mm-hmm.
and they're like, this ain't working, we all need to be here,
mm-hmm.
boom. So, I mean, I've heard that from quite a few, and then I've also heard the scenario where, like, there was a COVID issue
mm-hmm. yeah.
that actually impacted all of the council, and so then they tried to build it in. So it would be good to come back with some options to consider, some language to consider as we're kind of going through this.
Okay,
cool.
I can do that.
All right. We're on to item B, and that is you also.
Yes, and I will be brief. This is in your packet tonight because I haven't included it so far, and I always like to have committees have an opportunity to just take a glance at the types of things that we will be bringing forward for consideration, and this is that glance. And you have a few subject matter experts on the line if you have questions about any of the particular items. I think most of this stuff is self-explanatory. It's a budget year, as you know, and that's going to be a heavy lift for the committee and the council. There's a lot of the routine housekeeping items that you see, like the unclaimed property, canceling accounts receivable, things like that. So it's kind of a mixed bag. And there are several TBD items. Land sales with economic development staff are always kind of contingent on different variables. And that's my overview. Let us know if you have any questions about any of these items.
Right. And the budget workshops would not fall here.
Right.
Under the budget process.
Correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Questions on this item?
I'm just as much of this as we can get through in quarters two and three, the early part of three, as possible.
Okay.
And I already expressed that in the budget considerations, too. Anything that really is mandated, get it through soon.
Okay.
Because I don't, I frankly don't appreciate the big pileup of things that are no-brainers at the end of the year, alongside of things that take more conversation, and I especially don't appreciate we have to decide this meeting or we fall off a cliff.
Okay.
That's been too long and getting old. I think they try, and I don't want to put undue pressure on finance department to deliver sooner than they have to, but a lot of these, you know, pieces need to come through soon.
Okay. Oh, I don't have any questions.
Great. Neither do I. And we do also have the responsibility to, you know, kind of make sure that our client is responsive to, like, we got the easy stuff, let's go through the kind of administrative stuff and then, you know, get ourselves ready for the broader, more comprehensive discussion.
I also had questions for Vicki last week, sorry about the timing, Laurel, about ARPA, how we spent it, because a huge article came out talking about larger cities and the expenditures on police departments, not for things like helping people with rental assistance. And I know we had a big block of rental assistance, and Vicki did a great job of helping us with that, at least me. I don't know if that got circulated to everybody.
Yeah, it went to everybody.
Okay. And then while I was having that conversation, I got the sense there was going to be a briefing on what was expended.
Uh-huh.
So just want to be clear on when that's happening, because it's, everything that says ARPA says it's complete.
And we did have this as an item.
Might have been when I was
this was a,
yeah.
And we went through it.
With
But go ahead, Vicki. I mean, it was pretty detailed. We really spent some time on it, but go ahead.
Yeah, Vicki Carlson, Finance Director, for the record. So we did introduce our ARPA analyst, who gave a brief overview a couple meetings ago. But we do plan to loop back to the Finance Committee and the full council on how we spent ARPA funds in 2021 and how 2022 is shaping up. We're hoping to do that in May. We've got a lot of work to do to meet the federal deadline, which is April 30th. And so the focus right now is on meeting that filing deadline. But as soon as that's over with, I've been working with our ARPA analyst, Ms. Hatley, to prepare that report to come to the committee. Hopefully the second meeting in May is what we're targeting.
And I will submit that that overarching budget that I brought forward from the regional peace makers, that could be funded through ARPA funds as well. And so if they're turning theirs in on the 22 and we haven't even entertained what could be done this year for that,
go ahead.
I think that, and Ms. Carlson can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the April 30th deadline is the full reporting on 2021 expenditures. Is that correct, Vicki?
Well, yes. It includes everything from the beginning, the inception of ARPA, which is March, but it also goes through the end of March 2022. So that's where we're kind of scrambling, is we have 2021 buttoned up. But just because of how long it takes to process payroll, et cetera, we have to pull all of the first quarter information together and include that in that reporting period.
Okay.
And one top of mind when we actually did have it here, and Ms. Carlson, can you clarify, we have more requests for ARPA funds than we have dollars, correct?
That is correct, yes. And I do want to reiterate that Council only authorized ARPA funds for 2021 and 2022. We'll be discussing how to spend the rest of the ARPA funds, either through the budget amendment process, if there's additional projects that Council would like to fund in 2022, and then also for the next biennium. So that'll be part of our budget discussion.
And again, it's being informed by the data analyst, which helps us keep track of how we spend, because we got to get that right to know exactly what we're paying for, what we pay for, and the reporting associated. So looking forward to that discussion for sure.
So when I looked at the list for 22, though, my concern is housing, jobs, education.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I'm very concerned about the increase in crime and guns gun violence.
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing for it? And I overlaid it against what we had.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have a question mark about what are we doing about it. So what we knew in 2021, when we're making these decisions, I'm concerned whether or not we should reflect and say, are we doing enough for community with what we decided in 2021? Did we have enough information? Are we making enough headway? And so those are concerns that I have. And that's why I'm bringing this up. Not trying to question what everybody thought last year, but I am starting to say, does it fit the present, current present? And there's a lot of things that are very city of Tukwila oriented, as opposed to out in the community. And I'm worried about the balance or lack of it.
Yeah. Well, we haven't had that discussion here. We're going to have it, but to Councilor Delestrina Johnson's credit, that's actually how she laid it out when we actually had it in this committee.
Right.
And really asking, okay, now that we're informed about the process, are there different things that we would prioritize? That was the discussion. Just so really, you know, happy to hear you say that. And that's how it was teed up this year.
And for everyone's information, I did read the packet, even though I wasn't here for the meeting. So don't feel less informed. Just want to be tracking this and want to ask on this plan, when do we have that discussion?
Yeah, I think she laid out when we're having the conversation. Right?
Yeah, budget. Maybe even the budget
decisions.
And we were so last year's finance committee was really intentional about not wanting to allocate all of the ARPA funds because we didn't know, you know, how things would play out. And so I'm glad that we have the ability to still allocate some of the funding that we left untouched for this budget process.
Right.
So we'll get to have.
So when we say budget, that could be at the end of this year or could be May 1. And that's the question I have.
Well,
I'm just looking for a month.
I think we're going to have the conversation in May
because
we'll have more. And Director Carlson, tell me if I'm wrong. Right? That's when we have the conversation because the kind of books are in order to have that fundamental conversation.
Yes, that is correct. We do want to recap again. We want to recap how we spent the funds in 2021. Again, recapping what council has authorized for 2022. And I believe I have to go back and double check the meeting that it happened, but we did start the discussion about what the steps are going to be for 2022. And so when we bring that report to you in May, that'll be part of that discussion as next steps and how you want to address, if you want to add ARPA funding for different things this year, we can start that conversation at that same time. So I am shooting for the second meeting in May to have that conversation.
The point of this discussion would be something I would add to the itemized list here. For second quarter and not complete.
Yeah, that's right.
Not on this list.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely not on this list.
I think it should be.
Yeah, and I think that's why we're having this discussion, is to make sure it's reflected there.
Okay.
Right? Because
okay.
We can be informed by what the plan is, what the reporting piece is, what folks are doing, and is it ready to have the discussion with enough proaction that we can actually have a real conversation about prayer. All right. We're on item C, which is an update on the biennial budget outreach. And that is Ms. Carlson.
Okay. Move on. If we have other thoughts about this in the next week, can we bring that up in an email to you and CC the others? And if there's other items that come up.
Yeah, I mean, I'll send it to Laura. I don't have to be like a gatekeeper to that.
Okay. Thanks.
And then we can chat about it in the next week.
Mm-hmm.
Hello. Sorry.
Good evening. Perfect timing. good evening, council members and guests. Nyesha Fort Brooks, Community Engagement Manager. I'm here this evening with my colleague, Vicki Carlson, Finance Director. This evening, we will be briefing you on a high-level overview of the 2023 and 2024 biennial budget outreach efforts, the tactics, and timeline. Just real quick, I want to thank Laurel Humphrey, our Legislative Analysis, the Finance and Administrative Services Department for their strategic partnership in this work. Excuse me. And I also want to acknowledge that city staff's priority is to have alignment with the council and the administration for these outreach effort goals. You'll see in front of you the budget outreach goals are here to provide Tukwila residents and stakeholders the opportunity to share their thoughts with the mayor and the council on what priorities they think are important to the 2023 and 2024 budget. Additionally, the city is going to educate the Tukwila community on the challenges and constraints the city is facing. We know that the city continually maintains focus on accessibility and equity for the community. So that means that the budget information should be easy to understand. It will be translated into our top four languages, and the engagement activities will target the broader sector of our Tukwila community. So, Council, you will see in front of you the high-level tactics and existing opportunities that city staff has identified. I'm just going to name a few. So, our finance department will develop a presentation which will cover the basic budget overview. It will include the realities of the revenue to the expenditure forecast, and it will offer three survey questions which will be made available at every event. Staff will develop a website, will feature both the presentations that I just mentioned and videos, including the online survey. This morning, Vicki and I and TIS were just in a meeting to see how we can bring in a tech tool. It was called Balancing Act, which basically allows residents and stakeholders to provide their input on the budget. This online tool will allow funds to be moved while locking down some funds so that departments are not eliminated altogether. Our engagement efforts have begun this month, and city staff will continue to capitalize on existing events such as the See You in the Park series, and we will be moving forward with these outreach events until the end of July. We know that this timing is critical because we need the budget to reflect the community input. So this concludes my outreach report, and we are interested in hearing what the council has to say. Thank you.
All right, questions?
I'm nervous about saturation in the community. I see farmers market June, July, and that I see in July, August, pursuing the park events, which means results are going to show up in September. My comfort level is I can see why you choose the summer months, so there's a chance to engage with people, but at the same time, I get nervous about the timeline slipping down, because supposedly then we get the results by looking at this after Labor Day and somehow assimilate that with thoughtfulness into the budget, and it starts to feel like the last minute thing again.
I hear what you're saying. What I like about this timeline is that the survey is being developed and that it's going to be launched in May. I thought that whatever you guys did to launch the survey, the last budget process, that was good, but we didn't get the results in time. I feel like the results came too late. And so I don't remember when it was launched before, but I would like to get, you know, the survey results sooner than we did last time. I don't remember when it was, but it was like too late in the process that it seemed like the work that the city administration and the mayor had done was not informed by the survey results. And so, you know, and then when we got the budget, it was like, well, here you get a little bit to move around based on what you were seeing in the survey. But to me, I didn't like the timing of that. So if we could get the survey done and outreach done sooner and then pair it up with in-person events in the summer, that would be great. And then my other question is, you know, how do we as a council want to get involved? What have we done in the past? And because I do want to be out there talking with folks about budget this summer at these events or in something in other settings that you guys have found to be successful in your past times.
So there's some comments. Do you want to respond to the survey timeline? Maybe even lessons learned, Ms. Brooks or Ms. Carlson, just speaking to kind of rolling it out this year and how it's informed by past practices, or, you know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, so just wondering if you could speak to those items that were raised.
I'm going to refer to Vicki on the budget previously, because I wasn't around when that happened. So, and if Rachel's on the call, she can definitely chime in to provide more information about that.
Yeah, sure. I'll go ahead and chime in first. So, yes, the last budget process, it was very late in the process. It was very uncomfortably late. The biggest reason for that is it was 2020. When the pandemic had started in March, and there was a pretty significant pivot in our budget process, trying to just figure out the financial impacts of the pandemic. We are trying to get on this much, much earlier, but we also want to make sure we have plenty of time to hear from our communities. Everyone is busy, and so it's tough to get to the community in a month. And so as much as I would love to see this wrapped up by the end of June, because that would give us time to then digest what we hear, I'm just concerned that we won't have as much input as we would like into the process.
How many respondents did we have last time on the survey?
I think Ms. Humphrey might have the answer to that.
I can look it up while you continue meeting, and I'll have an answer by the end.
Okay. I think the approaches that you have are good, especially the part where they can move pieces around. I constantly go back to an experience I had with a school levy measure approach before they did the school levy, talking about the construction piece, the capital budget, and how they had representatives from all over the community. And they sent a council member, and there were other people in the room, and they would show us the whole budget, and they would show us the actual goals. And they would, we were right down to the plumbing deciding whether or not they could replace a drinking fountain to look better. And there were some times where we had to make the decision to keep the ceramic thing but do the plumbing. It got down to that level, and I don't think community wants to get down to that level. But the whole time, whenever we made a change, the percentage would change, and then what you'd ask for of the public and the measure would change. It was a fascinating process. That was rich and deep and hard to do in multiple languages, so I don't expect that. But the second thing that's on my mind is how everyone reacted to their property taxes this year, and laser beam focused on city and that it was all our fault. So there's an education component on, do you understand how little we actually get to maneuver? And then within that, how much of that's mandated? And then what's left to work with? My assumption is either this video or that movable game is going to help the public get to that level, but I don't know. And if we do nothing else in this process but help them get to that, and then my third comment is, when I've seen priority budgeting done in public before, they would identify things they didn't want, just like you see in these questions, and things that they did want, and they literally change the budget around and make it happen. And it's phenomenal when I see examples of it across the nation at NLC. I'd love to see that happen here, and I'm not sure if we deliver, maybe June is too ambitious, so end of July. And that way we're not doing stuff clear out into August, but we get a chance to meet with the public and work things out. That probably doesn't help you with your See You in the Park events, though.
All good information. Hoping you can both kind of take what you've heard and incorporate it in your planning. So I haven't got to weigh in on this, but I think one thing I've learned, I've seen it done a million ways, and none of it actually is like the golden ticket, right? And I think the great thing is we can learn from events that we've done in the past and make them better and stronger. The other piece is going to where people are, which is what's built into this. And then also hearing the statement about having the council also, you know, where it makes sense, hearing from you how we can help participate. Because, you know, my rule is like, if we can get everybody to show up to the budget, it'd be great. Unfortunately, my standard is changing softball fields to soccer fields where we pack the room. But I think we need to be able to learn from the things that we've done in the past, build on the things that we've been successful in doing, but also knowing that it's not just one touch, it's multiple touches before people truly can get the kind of feedback necessary. So I'd love to kind of hear, not now, but maybe when you come back, how you incorporate that into the process, because we can get a bunch of people in the room. It doesn't mean that the people who need to be heard are there or feel comfortable being in that room. And then also fundamentals, which is important, is what Councilmember Crawler talked about. And it takes time. Because even though there were people that made comments about the property tax that actually knew better. So even if you've got the information, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's in. But I think what you're hearing is thinking about July, and based on what you're hearing, are you hearing enough information? Because there could be a point where, as staff, you say, look, we need more time because we just got to the tip of the iceberg, what we feel like the community is really hearing, and then there are clearly other projects that have helped create more people that you can communicate with and get feedback with and you build trust with. So I think a part of this is, right, the saying progress moves at the speed of trust. No, something that we've heard, Naisha, right? And so that's the hope for this. It would be great to come back with some considerations based on kind of what you heard today.
I have one more comment. Is there a fourth question missing here? I mean, there's like, what would you take away? What would you move around? And what would you add? But what if it's like, what do you just absolutely want to preserve?
That's a consideration. Mm. I know that we had a hand up.
Me?
Not you.
I just wanted to respond to Councilmember Crawler's question about how many people. So 288 people took the survey last time, which was a significantly higher amount than we
ever before
experienced in the past.
We had a handout.
I think you put it down.
It was audience ones.
Yeah, I think it was
in Mr. Sherlock, did you have a question?
No, I took my hand down. Thank you. And I've been putting comments in the chat. Thank you.
We're seeing them as they scroll through. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, so I guess for both of you, did you plan on, I'm assuming you planned on coming back based on what you heard and just, you know, the initial reactions as well?
We can come back, Councilmember Coyne.
Great. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
We do have one more item of miscellaneous. Pretty important. Director Carlson, would you like to take this away?
Yes, absolutely. So thank you. And I apologize for making this a miscellaneous item, but I think it's important to get this information out there just for full transparency. As you know, obviously, we've already been started planning the budget process, and we've been starting to do some high-level planning to see where everything is. And one of the things that I just want to give a brief update tonight is where we could expect CPI for the coming biennium. And CPI CPI increases affect pretty much all aspects of our expenditure budget, in that the higher the CPI is, the more expensive it is for us to provide our services. All of our labor contracts have language that states, you know, salary increases or other than step increases are based on some form of CPI, a percentage of CPI. All of our supplies and services are also affected by CPI. The higher CPI is, the higher the cost is to obtain those supplies and services. And just to give you a little bit of background for CPI. Yes.
I'm going to stop you before you got to the 20th CPI. Can you explain what CPI is versus just general public so we all understand, because it's pretty significant?
That's exactly where I was going next. I wanted to give a little background for CPI for people that might be listening to this meeting. So what CPI is, it is the consumer price index that measures the average change of prices over time that consumers pay for goods and services. And what they do the calculation on, it's a fixed set of products and services whose price is evaluated on a regular basis, and it's used to track inflation. So some of the items tracked include basic necessities like food, food like cereal, milk and coffee, housing costs, furniture, clothing, transportation, and medical care costs. The goods and services tracked reflect the spending habits of two population groups. It includes the urban wage earners and the clerical workers, and those two groups represent about 93% of the total U.S. population. There's a small percentage of the population that is not tracked for spending habits, and that includes, interestingly enough, people living in rural and agricultural households, military, and then people living in institutions like prisons. So the two census groups that they use to track does cover about 93% of our population. Does that give a little background of what CPI is? Okay. So with all that said, again, we are expecting CPI to be very high for the next biennium. Right now, it's tracking about 8%, and it has been increasing. You might recall that CPI for 2022 is 6.3%. And if the trend continues, CPI could be as high as 9 or 10% for 2023. To put this in perspective, CPI has been averaging around 2.5% for a number of years. We did have a bit of a spike back in 2007, 2008, before the Great Recession occurred. But before that, we haven't seen a high CPI. I think the last time was back in 1989 through 1992, when CPI was closer to like 6 and 7%. So I just want to take this in front of council, the committee, so that you're aware of this. These are all things that we're going to be taking into consideration as we draft the budget and as we listen to the community and what their priorities are. But it's not great news. It's not a fun message to share, but I do want to get that message out there because it's gonna be a challenging budget year with CPI coming in that high and total revenues are not increasing at the same pace.
Great.
So thank you for that opportunity.
Yeah.
So just a comment that we attach a lot of our salary agreements with our unions to CPI as well. And do you know, so I'm learning more from another subject about the CPI nationwide versus CPI Seattle Metropolitan versus CPI Seattle Tacoma, which one do we measure?
I don't want to say incorrectly. Miss Bianchi, do you happen to know off the top of your head, because she deals with labor contracts? Otherwise, I would have to look it up.
It's a local, but it's June to June. So CPIW June to June is what we use.
CPI Washington or what's W?
I can't remember exactly. There's two different. So we'll get you that information, council member.
Okay, appreciate it.
CPIW, and it is the Seattle-Tacoma Metropolitan Area, CMSA.
Okay.
Oh, great. It's what we attach to our labor contracts, and then fundamentally, if you're living here buying goods and services, that is a impact, whether it's in the labor contracts or not, you're paying and the thing is, this is just a fundamental thing, right? Things are more expensive. It gets to your Seattle, component, right? I mean, the costs are the costs. And so what, you know, your dollar goes only as far as how everything else costs. So it's a significant impact. And since we said 1989, maybe in the 90s, this is the last time it's been this high. I hope that's not lost on any of us. I think there are some of us who were close to getting out of high school around that time, but, you know, kind of heard about it, right? And then there are some of us that haven't had that experience, but it is significant. I mean, this is just the cost of living playing out when you have employees and services that you provide to the general public that, you know, things cost what they cost, unfortunately. Oh, Rachel.
Thank you. I have the luxury of doing this remotely is that CPIW is for urban wage earners and clerical workers. So that's why we use CPIW because it's focused on kind of the kind of work that we do. So thank you.
Great. And Ms. Carlson, you're going to come back with more information as this continues to, as we'll see it kind of continue to kind of land on basically the cost of providing services and then us being able to incorporate that in the budget, right? Because things are more expensive to do because of these, of this consumer price index.
Yes. We, again, as Ms. Bianchi said, we use the June to June number, so we should know that early July. So that will give us the ability to nail down our planning purposes in July. One thing I do want to say is in past budgets that I've been with the city, because CPI and the inflation rate has been, you know, hovering around 0 to 2%, it's been very, very low. We've been able to maintain zero growth in our supplies and services. The growth has been in the labor cost. That's not going to be the same case coming forward. We can't continue to have a zero growth in supplies and services because this high of CPI is hitting everything. I do plan to bring more information as part of our budget workshops. We're going to have a budget workshop. The next one will be planned for the last meeting in April, where we're going to be talking about revenue. And so we're going to go through all of our revenue sources, talk about how the city is funded, some 10-year historical information so you can see over time how our different revenue sources have changed. Some are increasing, some are decreasing. I actually was surprised to see one decreasing. I didn't realize it was decreasing. So, and we'll also talk about some of the restrictions placed on those revenues. So hopefully we'll get a good grounding in how the city is funded at that meeting. And then future budget workshops, we will be talking about capital. Again, very high level capital, not getting into specific projects, but what kinds of capital projects the city is faced with, how it's funded, how capital projects are prioritized. And then we'll also have a session on expenditures, and this is where we will loop back on CPI and how it affects our just our general, how we pay for the services we provide.
I have one small little granular question, because when I worked for State Ferries, they have a huge consumption of diesel for obvious reasons. So they buy futures in fuel. They have to guess, but guess what? Over time, it really doesn't go down. It only goes down a little, goes back up. In 2010, it was at $4 a gallon, what we were paying. So we hovered, but now we're going up to a more continuous high probably on the fuel costs. Are we able to be involved in some kind of collaborative? I mean, I'm in a boating organization that does the same thing every spring. They all fuel up, and they save a ton of money doing it. Do we do that?
I need to double check on that, but I believe we are looped into something like that. But let me find out officially and get back to you on that.
Thanks.
Great.
I got a mish when you got it.
Okay. Well, and then remembering back to the last time we had a high CPI. It's part of the reason why we actually did this assessment of salaries was because we had contracts that were locked in because of the high CPI. And so that kind of kicked off our analysis on on compensation, and we've been now kind of committed to a process. We did an ordinance, and all those things are all tied to this. So I'm looking forward to the discussion because it's going to be informative, and it sounds like it's going to be a significant consideration as it relates to our budget. All right. So we have a miscellaneous.
So I'm just going to keep bringing this topic up until my purpose is for us to get educated as a council and know what's going to happen. The conversation going on in our community about raising the wage can be without us. I understand from some conversations that it has to go through us at one point. And I'm very concerned that we don't, A, know what CTAP is doing. We don't know what Seattle's doing. And we don't understand the differences the two have and whether or not this comes at us through public initiative or we have our own discussion. There are controls, and oddly enough, CPI is one of those conversations. Mm-hmm. CTAC is tied to the nationwide. City of Seattle is the metropolitan one. I would like us to, A, get briefed legally on what this process would be like coming through us, whether we initiate it or someone brings it to us, because that's likely what's going to happen. And for us to understand the differences in those two approaches and why one makes sense and one doesn't. And then, of course, the option of do nothing. And what does that look like as well? I brought up in council. People think it's going to happen during our budget process. I would like it to, because this is the governance and finance committee, to get somewhat formalized on educating us. They are shooting for, they only need less than 2,000 signatures. They're shooting for 3. Their goal is by June 1. It gives us very little amount of time. I've talked with Laurel. She's got some pretty hard things she's trying to accomplish here, and I think she wants at least until May. Is that what you told me, or halfway through April?
I told you I wanted to get through tonight's fireworks discussion.
Okay.
I could write a memo.
Okay. So, you know, in the next couple of weeks, it seems like we ought to be trying to get this as an item, like to have our attorney talk to us, like the public to understand what's going on, because this is happening, right? I'd like the council to be crystal clear on what the elements are that are being discussed. And then whether we do something or not is up to the council, but I'm very, very concerned that, A, the public's not educated, and they can't be if we're not educated, as far as I'm concerned. I think the people who are out there doorbelling are doing their best, but if I were to take someone who just signed it and went on and asked them just what the differences are between the existing ones, the two existing ones, and why they structure them that way, they don't have a clue. And so I'm very, very concerned that we don't have a clue, and I think we ought to kind of understand what the process looks like. I don't know if an initiative has come through here except maybe one other time in the history of Chipotle, if not at all.
Yes, they have. So, okay, so I'll ask something, because I think making an assumption what people know is not, I mean, I think yeah. More of having a process makes more sense.
Sure.
So if you're comfortable, I'm comfortable with framing this to ask for a factual information in finance and get the, you know, and try to see if we get another person that agrees with us and we can have a factual process.
Mm-hmm.
We probably know what the variables of consideration are, and those could be laid out in a factual way. But I'll make the ask so we can actually have the conversation if you're comfortable with that.
Sounds great.
Because I think the goal is to kind of get some fundamental things that also don't require your time, but may require somebody else's time. But to get that going, I don't mind stepping out and asking about that. Okay? All right.
And I thought Laurel sent out a really good extensive rules on what you should do, politically speaking.
Yeah, which is a different conversation.
Yeah. That's not what I'm asking for here.
Yep.
Although it might be smart to have the council have some Q&A moment.
I think if we present the information factually, then there's a greater likelihood of that occurring than trying to do it on its own.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you much.
All right, we're at the end of the meeting.